a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
It is time for the MGO Blog Roundtable. We don't need to get into all the pleasantries today because we have so much ground to cover with the venerable Craig Ross. Craig, how are you doing this morning?
I was fine. I knelt before the show. Ed and Brian didn't. And then Brian pointed out right away, you're an idiot because no one can see you. And I thought, oh, wow.
Yeah, we actually openly stared at you.
And we were at commercial.
it was actually during the show.
That's right. A point, too. That's two good points.
All right. We have Ed Fang from the Power Rank. Ed, good morning. Good
morning.
And then we also have Brian Cook from MGO Blog.
Morning.
All right. So your take, guys. Michigan loses 14-10 to Michigan State. Just a brief sort of intro with my thoughts. I felt like, clearly – stating the obvious, you lose the football five times. The overwhelming percentage, I don't have the numbers, I would say 100% of the time you're probably going to lose or close to it. But this was one where you look at the offense and across the board, there wasn't an aspect of the offense that can go blameless in this, from receivers to line to quarterback play. And then from a coaching perspective, what they have to figure out now that to start out giving Brian credit, because Brian said, a couple of weeks ago, he said, there are pieces of this that I don't think are going to get better. Like, I don't think the pass pro is going to get discernibly better. And to his point and to his credit, I don't think he wanted to be right on that. But he was right. So now what they have to figure out, and this has been my point all week, is how do you coach around that? How do you coach around the deficiencies? They're gonna still try to improve, but until it does, what do you do to put the offense in more advantageous positions? They weren't able to do that against Michigan State. They got to be able to do that moving forward. What say you guys?
I don't know, man.
You're speechless.
Like, I mean, I do think that O'Korn was a major source of the problems, not just the offensive line. Like, there were sacks that he ended up taking that were just like, he's got a clean pocket.
Yeah,
and he's deciding that he's going to start moving around, and that's the wrong decision. And he's got, Chris Evans wide open on a dump-off in front of his face.
Yes. You're talking about on the interception he threw into coverage.
No, yeah. I'm talking about a different play.
A different play than that.
Okay. I thought the interception he threw into coverage was actually a good throw, and then the linebacker got, a fingertip on it.
The first interception. No, I'm not talking about the first one. I'm talking about the one. Yeah,
he just overthrew him.
He just overthrew him.
Yeah. He was open. And it's Gentry, so he's got a decent window there, and he just
overthrew him.
I mean, it's raining, so that's why.
Well, I mean, it was also interesting that Michigan State made more catches in the rain than our receivers. But, I mean, I'd like to be a little contrarian here. Obviously, we have issues on the offensive line, but, I mean, it was a close game. Michigan State made a huge play in the first half on the big drive they made, 50-50 ball down the middle that gave them that's their second touchdown.
That's the one with Watson where he tipped
it. I mean, it was a 50-50 ball. Guy made a catch over him. If McDoom catches that, they have, at the very end of the game, they have a pretty good shot at maybe tying it. And if you, I thought Michigan State was
a
better team.
They had a big drop on third. Tristan Jackson dropped one.
Very close. Absolutely.
I feel like
that was hideous pass interference, by the way, on the offense. Which they just do with impunity because they know they're not going to get called for it.
It's interesting what you said about him. You said John O'Korn created some of the sacks holding onto the ball too long. Kirk Herbstreit said he felt like he bailed out on plays too quickly, that he didn't stay with plays long enough. I think it was actually a little bit of both. And what that's indicative of is a guy who isn't comfortable in the pocket, who the rush is kind of getting to him. And it's affecting his clock, whether that's a protection issue, whether that's, hey, are the receivers getting open, are getting creating enough separation? And this is where you see all of those things kind of manifest. So I want to get your take, Craig, because I guess for me, what I'm interested in is, okay, moving forward. because a lot of callers, a lot of pundits, they focus this on the critique on Michigan State and rivalry seriousness and preparation for this game, when to me, this game was more about it being a continuation of some of the issues that we saw in the first four. So what do you do to mitigate those things moving forward?
Well, I wrote in, I mean, I saw the offensive line as, and I think we all did, maybe most everyone did, as the major problem coming into the season. And even in my Ann Arbor Observer article, I said, look, this offensive line stuff ain't going away and it's a problem. And they need to do something different on offense than what they did last year. And I felt like they needed to go to something like the old Vikings offense of Bud Grant in the 70s, where you use the running backs as primary receivers, and sometimes you ran the running backs downfield to pull the safety help away from the line of scrimmage, and you dumped it off to, what was his name, Foreman. I'm trying to think of his first name, not George Foreman.
I was around in the 70s.
He was a great. He was, but I felt like our you know, the possible strength of the team was getting the ball out to 12 in space or one of the young kids in space, and use that as sort of a substitute for running, because they're short. They're basically short passes that are runs, and the Vikings did it and won championships with guys who couldn't throw the ball at all. In fact, a guy named Joe Kapp out of the Canadian Football League. And so my thinking was that maybe some sort of an offense like that might go, but it hasn't come to pass. The odd thing was, and it was a really good point I think that Brian made in his podcast this week, was we ran the ball pretty good when we ran power and traps and ISOs this week, and when we ran zones, not so good. So I mean, what do you think about that, Brian? Are we maybe just a Brady Hoke power team and not?
Well, whatever time they spent on inside zone in the offseason, they wasted. Yeah. And they can't run it. They never get the combos right. Mm-hmm. It drives me crazy. Mm-hmm. And the way that the Michigan's run game was moderately effective in this game, and I think it was moderately effective given the situation, is they ran a bunch of stuff that they ran last year. So they ran traps, and they ran some counters, and they ran some power, and that generally worked for 5 or 6 yards, and occasionally you get one of those big missed assignments, and you end up in second and 12, and then you got to go do something else. I also thought that the running backs didn't do a very good job of finding where the blocks were. And, I think a couple of things that stand out is Michigan doesn't have any skill position coaches. They have some grad assistants, but they have Pep Hamilton as a nominal wide receiver coach. They have Jay Harbaugh as a running back coach. I think those guys are both coaches, but good coaches, but they're not skill position coaches. And I think that the performance from both the running backs and the wide receivers this year has been disappointing. And then O'Korn made way too many mental mistakes in this game. So at the end of that first drive in the half, he tries to fade routes down the sideline.
Yeah, I want to speak to those.
Both of those are terrible decisions. Yep. So he has Gentry open on a route combination that looks like it's supposed to get Gentry open because they leave a wide receiver right at the line of scrimmage. Yep. So that corner out in the end zone is supposed to be there.
And he has pass pro on that. He has
pass pro on that. And then on the Andy McDoom one, he's got a little angle route from Grant Perry that I can't believe is not what's supposed to be his first read. But it looks like he decides before the snap that he's going to throw a fade route at a 5'11 receiver who hasn't shown anything downfield all for his career.
Which made no sense because there was no safety in the middle of the field on that play, too. I mean, I don't know if they do sight adjustments, but when you come to the – if you're going to throw out to the left on that and there's no safety in the middle of the field, why are you making the sideline an additional defender? I mean,
well,
I think you're
probably right.
By the way, Chuck Foreman. Everyone keeps responding back. Chuck Foreman.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I wasn't around in the 70s.
See, actually, with that, Chuck Foreman was a fullback, and they would use a halfback to run the
Craig,
linebacker.
We already know too much about the 1970s Vikings.
Right. Sorry. I think there's a good chance you're right about him making the decision that that's where he's going to go. I think he feels that's a route that he feels. Think back to the Florida game. He came in the game.
I mean, he's got it down, but the receiver's got it before.
That's what he threw. And I'm not saying that it was the right decision. I'm saying I think that's what he feels It's one of the things he feels really comfortable with.
Well, and then later in the game they have play action and it sucks a safety up, and you have Donovan Peoples-Jones who's running a fly route, and he's inside the numbers, and there's no safety help, and O'Korn looks right at it, doesn't throw it, and I'm just like, what more do you want in that situation? You've got a ton of room to the sideline. You've got the most athletic receiver on your team. Throw the ball. And then he's got Henry Poggi wide open because nobody bothered to check him underneath. Doesn't throw that either. Scrambles. I think most of the decisions he made in this game were wrong. And he took ownership for this loss afterwards, and I agree with him. There were a lot of bad plays.
Harsh.
But he was terrible.
If you watch that game and you think John O'Korn's the biggest problem with that football team, I don't know what football game you're watching.
Okay.
He scrambled plenty. He made a lot of plays with his legs. The pressure that he was under. The right tackle was essentially a statue.
It's not allowing
wine. It is true.
It's not.
How many plays? Eluzio got benched because he let Frey just run around him.
Yeah, at 10
so
yards.
So he was under pressure
all game.
So he has
an opportunity to move out.
He scrambles. He found a bunch of receivers downfield. Now,
and
I don't think he missed
every single one of them.
That's not true.
It is.
It is not true. He scrambled plenty of times and made a bunch of throws. He made the throw downfield to Crawford that was called back on the holding.
Okay.
If you think John O'Korn is the biggest problem in this team, you were watching it
in this game. And since I went over the game and you didn't.
I did go over. I went through every play last night.
Okay. Did you chart it?
In my brain, I did.
In your brain, okay.
So if you think that's a bigger problem than the offensive line and what they're doing there, I don't really know what game you're watching.
I think it in a way is a distinction without a difference, because even if John O'Korn made had the poor decision sort of percentage that you say, and even if the offensive line is the issue that you say. Maybe the answer, maybe the remedy is they either have to focus more on, and this is where I want you guys to kind of, you know, put your brains into what do they do looking ahead. Either they have to focus more on running the football, or what do you do to make John O'Korn more comfortable? Is it as simple as saying, okay, well, you got to make better decisions, John? Is it as simple as saying that, or do you have to find some more things? Or tailor the offense to things that he's more comfortable with? Is he more comfortable throwing on the run? Is he more comfortable?
Well, he didn't have a choice. That's part of my point.
But I'm talking about by design and not by improvisation, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
So not a scramble. You know, are they putting him? Are there more boots? Are they putting him on the edge more? Are there more run pass options? Are they doing those kinds of things to kind of mitigate some of the issues that Brian is talking about? Kind of mitigate some of the issues that you're talking about as well.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the answer, but could it be one?
I mean, we'll see. We saw the Purdue game. He looked real good. And kind of go back and look at that tape, and it's like, okay, he's got his first read open all the time.
See, but think about think about when he's made most of his plays. The one play that I could think about him making in the pocket was a skinny post to Perry.
Yeah.
That got you to the 1 yard line. But most of his other plays that he's had – and games have come while he's on the move.
I mean, yeah, you can give him a half-field read and roll him out of the pocket, and maybe that'll help. But, I mean, you're rolling towards the right tackle.
I mean, he did have that fade against Florida that, you know, was very similar to the two that he missed in the end zone in this game. I don't know. I mean, I've been an old corn hater ever since he transferred here. I mean, I've never liked the guy until the spring game this year. And I'm just telling you, he's not the biggest problem. He did not have his best game, and he made some bad throws in the rain. But,
well, I mean, I'm sort of in between you guys. I didn't think O'Korn was very good. I thought he was bad and made a lot of mistakes. But I also don't think, you know, he was the only problem. I mean, obviously the offensive line.
Saying that.
Yeah, I didn't say you were quite saying that. But this game isn't all on him. But it's on the offensive line. It's on him. Even the defense had the one very, very poor sequence, I think, in the second long drive wasn't good.
I guess what I want you guys to think
and
about
and the fumbles. The two fumbles are key in the game.
Yeah, they're huge. They're absolutely huge. Yeah. What I want you guys to think about in the break is, okay, the issues that you've identified, we don't even have to agree. Mm-hmm. On what their issues are, what the biggest issue is. What I want to know is, what do you think? What now? What now moving forward, understanding through five games? A five-game sample space is enough of a sample space to know what your issues are. So understanding those issues, what now? That's what I want to focus on the other side. We'll get to it. We'll get to your phone calls, emails, and tweets as well. Let's go to the phones, guys, and then I want to get your takes on, all right, now what? Let's go first to Jason in Northville. Jason, what's up?
Morning, guys. You know, I'm still all in for Harbaugh, but given the circumstances, what we knew State was going to do and what the weather was expected to do for some days, I can't get over the feeling that Saturday was a fair amount of coaching malpractice in the game plan. And I just don't understand why they didn't, you know, plan on it being a rock fight and go full on, you know, Baltimore Ravens with Trent Dilfer as offense. And what they did trying to go multiple wides didn't make any sense. I know you guys have talked about it a little bit, but it just didn't make any sense to me. And in the game planning, all season on the offensive side of the ball hasn't made sense. We know the defense is fantastic, so why not just rely on our strengths, punt, and play for field position?
You know, I think you make the case for you start out the season and you show some flaws. You believe that you can improve, that some of the issues that you have will dissipate over time. When they don't, that's where, all right, now what adjustments are you making? And in this game, what they have to, I keep saying, and this is where I want you guys to go, it's a nice segue, actually, Jason. Mm-hmm. All right, now that, you know, your issues are pretty apparent after five games, what do you do to kind of get around those, to mitigate some of the flaws that are there? And it could be, it doesn't have to be, you guys don't have to agree on what the flaws are. I just want to know what you think is the remedy moving forward. Starting with you, Brian. Like, what would you do? What would you do? That's what I want to know. No, not telling them what they should do. What would you do?
What would I do? Yes. I don't know. There's not much you can do when your receivers are bad and your offensive line is bad. And you're not running the ball real well.
And your quarterback is inconsistent. Yeah.
So
I
would pray, Sam Webb.
Come on, man. Clearly.
Got ideas.
Okay, go ahead. Well, within reason, Craig. Within reason.
All right. Within reason.
No 70s NFL teams.
Well, wait. But number one is something that you mentioned, Brian, which is I think perhaps we need to run more ISOs and power and less zone. That's what it seemed like on Saturday, and I give you credit for that. I didn't notice it. You noticed it.
I noticed it in game.
Yeah,
they're running.
Tweeted about it in game, and I think again it's easy to kind of armchair it, but in their analysis, I mean, it's logical to conclude that they go back and they chart the plays that went well. They chart all their plays, and then you compare what went well to what different, yeah, what didn't, and clearly in that contest, yeah. I mean the hard hitting plays right up the gut, they did much better. Yeah. They did much better.
Second thing for me is I would do some reversal of play sequencing. They did this in the Florida game to some extent. I would run more on pass downs, what seemed to be pass downs. I'd pass more on run downs.
They tried to do that on third and four.
Yeah. And it didn't work, but I wasn't frustrated by that, even though the fans generally were. I mean, that worked. I mean, Harbaugh pointed out at his presser, you know, hey, we did that in the Florida game. It worked, and we were stars, and here it didn't. Yeah. But I still think that's generally a good idea. Three is... I probably, because my defense, the defense is good, I probably run more fourth down plays. I probably play four down football, not three down football.
That's something that you do that you would suggest no matter what the situation
that's
was.
That's true, but I mean, but why not?
Like I said, within reason.
But why not take advantage of the actual arithmetic of the realities?
So, so run more on fourth down as opposed to run
punting.
More. I gotcha. But I'm talking in percentage, let's limit it to three downs. So in percentage of three down plays, would you run more? than they are currently?
Yeah, especially if I'm playing, if I come out and I'm playing four down football, and as opposed to three down football.
But they aren't going to do that.
Okay, well, you asked me what I would do, okay, and not what they're going to do.
That's fair. That's fair.
And four is, I do look at old tapes of Minnesota, sorry, because they had a quarterback who couldn't really throw the ball that very well, but they still won a championship with great defense and by using their fullback out of the backfield as a pass catcher. It worked with a quarterback who's probably worse at throwing the ball than John O'Korn and Joe Capp. And so it can be done. And one last thought is the Harbaugh play construction, I think, at times is brilliant. The play, I mean, in fact, the play that Brian talked about in the first half, when we drove, we had a second and seven down on the 11 or 12 yard line, and they threw the fade. That play was brilliant. I mean, they flooded the boundary. They left Higdon out and never moved him off the line of scrimmage, which forced the defensive back to come down, which left the middle of the field open to the slant to Gentry, and he had pass protection, and it's there. I mean, the touchdown is there, and he throws the fade. And so I mean, you can't blame coaching on that. That's a brilliantly designed play that worked.
And so, which is you know, the coaching piece of it. You're right. That's execution. But the coaching piece of it, when you obviously you can get in and practice, and you can drill him on his eyes and what he's seeing. But let's assume that he doesn't see that. Let's say that he continues to not see that. What does he do well, and what does the offensive line do well right now? Is the offensive line, can we agree, do they run block better than they pass block?
No. Well, I mean, probably just because Onwenu's probably a better run blocker than pass blocker.
I mean,
according to you, right, Brian?
So the pass blocking, I mean, they have a big hole at right tackle, but it hasn't been as awful as it looks, and the quarterback is currently sacking himself.
Okay, so that's okay. Then I stated it wrong. Do they run the ball better than they protect? That encompasses more than just the offensive line.
I think
line.
They're about the same.
You do?
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, neither's good, right?
I don't think, I mean, it depends. Like, I think maybe if they go back to the power stuff, they'll be better at that.
Gotcha. So, that being the case.
I mean, the one thing I would do is just keep working with these young receivers and young running backs. I mean, I agree with Brian that their play's been disappointing, and you have a guy that's as talented as Donovan Peoples-Jones, just keep working with that guy every week.
And
on
he's
the
not, but he's not getting the ball. I mean,
he's
they
getting
got
targeted. I mean,
once
I
think this.
Yeah,
week.
He's all the targets that are currently going to Crawford should go to Peoples Jones because Crawford had an opportunity to make a play in this game, and the ball goes right through his hands and hits him in the face mask. And we've seen that all year. And I think it's time for Peoples Jones to get some of those shots.
Yeah, and you know, Jim talked about where they are with him, and his, you know, his thing is, you know, he comes from an offense that, and we're really kind of seeing the difference with Tariq Black. Tariq Black technically was more advanced. Getting off the line of scrimmage, technically he was more advanced at that part of the game. And Jim was more broad in his description of what needs to happen with Donovan, but he talked about technique, needing to improve technique. But I'm curious what you guys thought of the fade ball that went to him, that he wound up catching out of bounds. What did you think of that play?
He misplayed that. He's catching it. He's not high pointing it, and he put himself out of bounds. So
not a bad ball.
No, not a bad ball.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean,
yeah, I don't know
that
if I necessarily
catchable.
Think
would
that
would have been a great play.
But I mean, I think that's part of, you know, I mean, coaching the wide receivers, right? Like, you know, can you get him to run that route? And I point, but I don't know. I've never coached a wide receiver, but that's what I would work on.
I mean, again, I think I work on trying to get 12 and Peoples-Jones the ball into space because they both have ability to beat tacklers, and they're not. And that's, you know, you ask me what I would do, that's what I try to do.
You know, we've seen teams with really good defenses and offenses that are challenged. It's fair to say this offense is challenged. Find a way just to not – to play to your defense, to not let you know your offense put you in bad positions, and they may be a team like that. You know, I don't know if they made that determination yet, but they may be. And so I guess my point is, you can still win. You can still win with a challenged offense. This is where the expertise comes in, right? This is where you figure out what buttons to push. Hey, if we don't have a quarterback that can that can see that can see the progressions that you're talking about, then hey, maybe you limit his progressions. Maybe you give him half field reads. Maybe you put him on the move. Maybe you run him more. If
I mean, that is one thing. Like, they had no quarterback run game in this game, and Michigan State knew it. So whenever they ran zone read, they just ignored O'Korn. And that is an asset that he has. I don't know if I mean you might get him injured if you. But when's a Michigan quarterback, pocket or not, made it to the end of the season? Never.
And then I think you guys, and I think Brian in your breakdown, you might be onto something. In that, hey, if their base blocking, drive blocking sort of plays are more effective than the zone stuff that they do, you got to believe that that's something that they see too. And so maybe you see more of an emphasis on those types of plays moving forward.
You will. I think it's clear they tried to do something in the offseason and they failed at it, and now they're going back to what they know.
Well, Sam and Brian, I mean, I got a question for you guys. I mean, how much credit are you willing to give Michigan State?
Not much.
To be clear, I've all week tipped my cap to a team that in the offseason had, it was just a catastrophe, one after another. They've been severely depleted. They're the less talented team in this equation. They're on the road. Michigan's coming off a bye. It says something that they came in and they made fewer mistakes. They made fewer mistakes than Michigan in this game. Now, I give them a ton of credit for that, for coming in and winning this game despite all of those circumstances. So I gave them credit, but this is a game Michigan should have won.
No, I agree.
This is absolutely Michigan should have won.
One out of 130. Like, where do you put Michigan State?
I mean, I do not Brian? Feel like this is a team.
I don't know. They're 6-6 or 7-5.
Yeah, they may be. They're maybe somewhat better than I thought they would be. But I didn't come out of that game saying, oh, wow, Michigan State is a ranked team. I didn't see a ranked team.
Well, they're going to be 9-3 this year. I mean, aren't they in the end? I think they're a pretty good team.
I don't really care.
I mean, you may not care.
I understand you guys don't care, but I think we need to bring this up.
I think they're a pretty good team, I think their quarterback is good. I think Lewerke was better than O'Korn.
Yeah, he also passed for 94 yards.
I know, but he also made plays.
He took care of the football. Yeah. That's what he did.
He took half of his passing yards on a contested double catch ball.
And he had
4.3 yards in attempt.
Which is why I say you can win. Michigan can, even with all the challenges that they have, they can win if they just take care of the football.
Yeah, and I mean, Michigan State had a 5-0 turnover margin in this game, and they probably still should have lost. So.
I mean, and that's a fair point. I mean, it came up earlier about, you know, can you lose turnover battle 5-0 and win a game, and I doubt if it's ever happened. So this is
probably happened.
I don't know. I tracked this back a few years ago when I was doing my first book on turnover margins and interceptions, and I never saw a game anywhere near that where it was even close. So
I'll look it up this afternoon.
Okay.
It's probably happened.
Let's go to the phones, talk to Jim in a car. Jim, what's up?
Hey, fellas, good morning. Just in listening to you, I realize one of the big problems we've got is we have no offensive identity. You couldn't decide who our best offensive lineman was because it was, well, are we a power running team or are we a passing team? And because if you're a power running team, you want offensive linemen who that's their forte. If you're going to be a downfield passing team, you want guys whose forte is passing. So I guess my question for you guys, two questions. One, what is our identity? And two, who is calling the plays? And I would just hang up and listen.
Man, first of all, they haven't established an identity yet. I think I know what they want to be. But that's different from what they are right now. And we've covered this play calling thing a ton, and I'm going to say again, I don't know the play call workflow, I don't know the process, all that they've revealed to us is that you have a collective as a staff that they come up with a play, but ultimately the person that, and this is what Pep said in the spring, he said, hey, ultimately, the person who decides what play we're going to run is Jim Harbaugh. And he meant that literally. It's not like, hey, they, you know, they're having this collective, and then it's like, and then Jim sits there and he's, no, the guy who sends the play into the quarterback is Jim Harbaugh. So literally on every play, and this is the point, this is why I tell you, been saying to people, Jim's not lying to you, not just covering, you know, he said he's covering for a set. He's not doing that when he says, at the end of the day, what we run is on me. And that is literally true. He is determining on a play-to-play basis what play goes into the quarterback. Now, what leads up to that is what we don't know. It's not, as far as I can tell, discernibly different from what they did the last 2 years. So I guess for me, it's hard for me to agree with that being the issue or an issue if it wasn't the issue or an issue the last couple of years. They were fine years one and two with this process. So why is that all of a sudden an issue now?
Yeah, I think that's a red herring.
Yeah. Do we need to harp on the play calling when you lose a close game to a rival?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I doubt if it's obviously not collaborative in the small picture. Maybe in the big picture it's collaborative.
Right. Yeah. So again, I don't know. I wish I could give you, offer you some insight into how that goes. But at the end of the day, how important is it when it's the same as it has been? Mm-hmm. It hasn't changed. So, you know, that lack of variance to me should tell you that that's not a problem. That's not the problem. All right. So let's get right to it, guys. I know we want to get a few words in on Indiana. But we got a couple of guys on hold wanting to talk to the roundtable. So let's go to the phones, go down to Dallas and talk to Sean. Sean, you're on the Michigan Insider. What's up?
What's up, Sam Webb?
How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How about you?
Doing great.
Good. I'm getting a little closer to Ant, so I'm actually heading to Houston now. So I'm of course pumped about that, right?
Good for you. Good for you, my man.
So hey, listen. My question is this: so Jim Harbaugh is supposed to be the quarterback guru. I think everybody pretty much agrees with that, right?
Mm-hmm.
My question then is: O'Korn has been in the program for two and a half years, roughly now.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a matter of O'Korn not being able to pick up what Jim is teaching him, or is it that Coach Harbaugh has lost, you know, some sort of, you know, what made him him?
Well, so this is what I want. So, guys,
it's definitely the second part. Let's fire him. Next question.
So you guys can break this down. What kind of offense did John O'Korn come from?
He came from a passing spread.
And would you agree that this offense is wholly different from the one he came from?
Well, I mean, I think his problems are similar. He had a lot of bad decisions. He wanted to escape the pocket the whole time.
Hey, he got benched at Houston, right, in favor of Greg Ward.
Yeah, he threw a bunch of interceptions at people. I think, you know, if you gave David Cone to Harbaugh, was he going to make David Cone into a D1 quarterback? If you give Craig to Harbaugh, is he going to make Craig into a D1 quarterback?
Not me.
So
David Cone.
You go from an offense where, you know, a couple of the elements, obviously he's coming from a spread that – you know, is going to simplify some reads, is going to have him on the move more, is going to allow him to get some calls from the sideline as well. And then you throw him into this offense. And so you bring those things, those issues that he had with him, in addition to learning a new system. In that first year, you could chalk it. That first year doesn't count because he's not even running Michigan's offense that first year. You know, all of the accolades that we were hearing about how he was doing was coming as he was the scout team quarterback. And so it's worthy to note that. So really it's the last couple of years that we're talking about him really being immersed in the offense. And hey, what you got, I think to Brian's point, you're right. It's not like you take every, who's to say that he's not better than he was at Houston? He might be.
He is.
Better than he was at Houston. So he's improved. But it's relative. Is he where Michigan needs him to be? Against Michigan State, he wasn't. You hope he will be moving forward, that he takes care of the football much better. If he doesn't, you'll see another guy. 734-998-1050. Let's talk to Scott in Grand Blanc. Scott, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hey.
Good. This team isn't built to go the length of the field. right now. So I think that they're going to probably adopt Beamer ball, because if you look at it, they basically have Bud Foster's defense, and they're going to have to win on defense and special teams and try and shorten the field, because right now for them to go the length of the field is really a tall task. So the team reminds me of Vatek years ago, where they went for special teams and, you know, defense. That's how they're going to have to do it and went on a short field. What do you think?
That's not crazy. I mean, but if you're going to do that, obviously you can't turn it over. You know, you can't do 5-0 on turnovers and play that sort of game. But, yeah, that analogy is maybe apt.
Indiana, guys.
Definitely a football team from Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
they were mildly competitive against Ohio State early, and then Ohio State took away the one thing they were able to do on offense. Their offense line is terrible. Peyton Ramsey is a freshman. I expect kind of similar it's just going to be the Michigan State game again, basically. Like, their defense is going to overwhelm our offense. Our defense is going to overwhelm their offense. And hopefully we don't turn over 5 times.
Mm-hmm. Where do you have Indiana, Ed, versus Michigan State? I mean, I think Michigan State's a better team than Indiana, but not a whole lot better. So.
Yeah, I mean, I have Michigan State higher than Indiana. I mean, I think Indiana, you know, with the freshman quarterback, it's going to be tough against that defense. And, yeah, I think the offense will do better this week against Indiana.
Do you think Simi Coppins is the best receiver in the Big Ten?
It's up there, yeah.
Yeah, probably.
I'd take him.
Yeah, probably. I would say that's a probable yes.
I think he's the best receiver in the Big Ten. Yeah. And that is going to be the toughest matchup for these corners thus far. Question is, can Peyton Ramsey put it on him like we saw Legault do against Ohio State?
Yeah, I think
we're going to see both quarterbacks in this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think what Legault did against Ohio State were some pretty high-risk passes. I mean, it was kind of these jump balls that didn't have a lot of arc, that if you're just prepared for that as a cornerback, you can get up and at least knock down. So, I mean, that
easier
doesn't concern
said than
me.
Done, right?
No,
I mean, how tall, how big is Simi Coppins?
6'4".
Throw it up to him.
Exactly. But if throw it up to him with some arc to get it over the defender.
And how much arc do you need when you're going against a 5'9 guy? 6'4 against 5'9 guy.
Who's 5'9?
We don't have any 5'9.
Okay, 5'11 guy. 6'4 or 5'11 guy.
5'11 with hops, man. It's like Sam Webb type hops.
I was talking about the Ohio State guy that he was going against. He wasn't a super tall guy.
No.
You know, it looked like he was about 5'9", 5'10", and he got owned. He got owned in that game by Simi Coppins. So.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be similar. Like, if he makes catches, they'll be contested. Everything Michigan has given up this year has been contested, and they've defended a lot of passes, and I think you're going to see something similar. Like, he'll get his. Like, he's good enough that he'll have some contested catches, but he'll have to make them with a guy in his grill.
And certainly you hope that it's with heat on the quarterback. I mean, that's, you know, a big key for Michigan. You want to talk about big keys. Don't turn it over, but forcing turnovers like Michigan did in all but one game this year, and sacking the quarterback like Michigan did in all but one game this year.
Gary had a sack. They just didn't give it to him.
You thought that was a sack?
They did not.
I mean, it was behind
sack.
The line of scrimmage.
Yeah, it was definitely behind.
It was like
the line of
a half yard behind the line of scrimmage.
Okay.
But they rounded him out of a sack. Terrible.
Poor Rashad. 10 o'clock on a Thursday. That'll do it for today's show.